Hello, hello. Test. Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure?
Yes.
Okay. I can go louder if you want. My name is Greg Martin. I'm a hobbyist Android developer, and I'm going to be giving a talk on doing Android development on Linux. Clearly, I was lazy and didn't prepare any of this, so didn't have anything to put there. That's me in my spare time. I am a field services technician for Macy's as a day job, so you know, programming is not a professional thing yet, but I have published a couple apps on the Play Store. First one was Shopper. It was really, really horrible, really super horrible. It was basically nothing but a grocery list manager app, if you can imagine how good that is. Did a couple games. I took part in the Make Fun of King bit, where you make a candy-based game. And most of my stuff is actually now in enterprise. I do a lot of apps for the technicians in the field, basically managing cases, using the phone for a bunch of different utilities, travel apps, managing mileage that you can get reimbursed for business and stuff like that. Kind of what I'm going to cover, why you want to use Linux for Android development. That should be an obvious question or obvious answer, but you'd be surprised how many people don't use Linux or use Linux for Android development. Which distribution you want to pick, which flavor of Java, because you have two available on Linux, which IDE you want to use, different kinds of configurations. I'm not going to get into religious arguments about Linux and Java and IDEs and all that crap, but there's going to be biases there. I don't have code samples on me, and I don't do app design, so we're not going to do that. Just a screenshot of some of the stuff I do. This is an app that's used for managing mileage that I was referencing earlier. Nothing really fancy there. And this was a in-progress SMS replacement for Hangouts because I hate that app. I think it's terrible. And this is still in progress. So yeah, why do you want to use Linux when you have Windows, Mac, and of course, you know, UBSD people in here too, so. You know, why do you want to use Linux? On Windows, it'll work. You have a lot of hurdles, though. When you want to start development, you're going to need your hardware. You absolutely need a piece of hardware to test on because you're doing it in the emulator is not going to give you a full complement of features to work with. However, whenever you want to use a device in Windows, you do need the OEM drivers per device. So if you have an HTC device, you need the HTC drivers. If you have a Samsung, you need Samsung drivers. It just turns into a lot of bloat for less work. The SDK installer, you do have the option on Windows to use the binary SDK installer that you can download from the Android website. A lot of times it won't find Java even if you have Java Home set. So you have a lot of issues with getting it to locate where Java is, and you don't have that problem on Linux. Emulator performance on Windows can be hit and miss depending on the graphics card and the driver that you have installed for that graphics card. Even if you have it set to use the GPU, it's still kind of flaky. It's going to take a little bit stutter, especially if you're testing animations and stuff like that. That's not really the ideal environment for that. I used Windows for Android development for about a year, and then I just very quickly switched over to Linux. It's not worth the time and effort to get things to work on Windows and for obvious reasons. Macs, I don't use them. I hear great things about it. I hear that, you know, the SDK runs great on Mac, but you'll have to tell me because I ain't got a freaking clue. And you'll never see me use a Mac either. So Linux, no stupid OEM software required. You do not need those things. You just plug in the USB device and it's good to go. You run ADB, you may need to run it as root, but you run ADB and it'll just see the device immediately. There's no magic there. Java detection, depending on which version of Java you do install, is automatic. Your IDE will detect it. The command line will detect it, you're good to go. Emulator performance is surprisingly really good with just the base. I think I have the Gallium driver on my laptop. So the emulator performance is really good. I still would not recommend using the emulator if you're doing UI testing because it's so slow. The other good thing about doing it on Linux is if you want to manage anything from the Android open source project or if you want to build your own ROMs, Linux is going to be the way to do it. It is so much easier to manage downloading AOSP, which is a beast. So easier to manage it on Linux. You can pick whatever you want, frankly, I don't care. You know, you could walk out of here and be like, that guy was just talking out his ass. go and, you know, go use Windows. I don't care, but I'm going to be using Linux, and you guys should too, because it's a lot easier. So the distribution, you know, I'm a prolific distro hopper. I get itches. I start, you know, nuking my computer every 3 weeks. Fedora is my baby, except this is a mint box. So Fedora works. It's a little hard to get everything working right, but because, you know, Fedora wants to be different. Ubuntu, you know, you got Debian. It's going to work. Any of the Ubuntu derivatives, Elementary OS is a great one to use, especially if you want a sexy looking desktop and you want to develop in it, that's the one to go with. I don't hate myself enough to try it on Arch, but I'm sure somebody else has. And like I said, my preference is Fedora. You can use anyone you want, though. That's the key point there. So, the next thing, you got to know that when you start Android development, you are going to be programming in Java. It's a Java variant. It's not, it's technically Java, but technically not, because you are writing to Dalvik and Art. They're different runtimes. So there are certain things in the language that won't carry over to Android as you would do just on core Java right into the JVM. But you do have two different versions of Java available on Linux. You have the OpenJDK and you have the Oracle JDK. OpenJDK, the nice thing about this is that most every distribution repo has the OpenJDK package in it. So it's literally like an apt-get install or a yum install away. There's no brain work required for that. If you like just using open source software, there you go. If you hate Oracle, you're in good shape, even though they're here. Sorry. I saw that earlier and I was like, shit. OpenJDK, believe it or not, there are some things that it will not run. And I know you might be scratching your head a little bit at that. There are some things. It's gotten better. A couple years ago, IntelliJ would not run with OpenJDK on your Linux box. It would actually see that it was not Oracle and it would just puke. Couple things though with OpenJDK, if the package names are a little weird, you have to get the development one to get Java C, otherwise you will not be able to run the development kit. And it does not set JDK home in your environment, which you absolutely need, especially for IDEs. If you're running it, if you're trying to do your Android projects in the command line, you don't need to worry about that so much, but you kind of want to set that just to make everybody happy. Oracle JDK. If you hate freedom, go ahead and use it. If you hate yourself, go ahead and use it. Oracle does not provide a dev package, at least that I've seen. I've never seen one on their website. They have an RPM. The alternative is a gzip file. Installing that and managing that is all manual, 100%. You will have to update it manually. You will have to handle the eccentricities of it manually. But it runs everything. And that's the only redeeming trait about it. I have not had one thing on Linux run that has not complained about having Oracle's JDK on there. I pick OpenJDK. Why? Because I'm lazy. Because I can just type it in and say, you know, install OpenJDK, and everything I have works on it now. There's absolutely no reason for me to worry about it. Later, I'll get into IDEs. My IDE of choice is IntelliJ, not the Android Studio variant. OpenJDK works with it flawlessly. So there we go, to IDE or not to IDE. A little Shakespearean pun. You can manage your Android projects completely over the terminal. If you like, you know, sitting there at a terminal with 15 different windows open, typing endless words, you can do this. You're gonna hate yourself though. You really are. Especially if you wanna do things like manually integrating Gradle, for example. If you use Gradle or Ant or anything like that. Ant, though, is handled by default when you make an Android package. Gradle is not, so then you have to manually handle that as well. You know, sitting at home at night next to the camp or next to the fireplace with your laptop or the terminal, that's your idea of a good time, there you go. They're sort of like a big three, what I like to call, that's my own terminology for it. You can slap me if you want. Eclipse, IntelliJ, which is what Android Studio is based off of. The differences between Android Studio and IntelliJ are minor in some ways, but here's where people are going to kill me. If you use Eclipse, I am not your friend. If you use Eclipse, you wake up in the morning feeling miserable and want to hate everybody else. All right? I used Eclipse for a very long time before I did Android development, which if you're doing pure Java development, you're in the enterprise and your company uses it, that's fine. If you're using it at home, I'd say half hour, 45 minutes, crashing, blowing up, plugin fail, couldn't compile a project. Oh, sorry, you wanted to use the UI designer? Can't do that, bro. So it's an ugly IDE, it's too big, doesn't integrate with your version control systems very well. It has plugins for it, but they're shit. And you know, if somebody's holding a gun to your head, telling you to use Eclipse or die, then go ahead and use it. Otherwise, I wouldn't recommend it. Now, that was the IDE that Google was promoting when they first started doing the Android development. You could download the ADT and go from there. These days, they have it available, but I don't see too many people using it anymore, honestly. It's more, they're pushing Android Studio, and if you don't like Android Studio, you have IntelliJ, which their plugin is maintained by them, and it's easier to use. Which goes to IntelliJ, and I'm going to gush a little bit because this is my baby. The plugin support for IntelliJ is really good, especially when it comes to version control. Their Git integration is fantastic. When you want to make a commit, control K. You type in your message, commit, done. They also support remote pushing if you have a GitHub, which is the one that they support natively, but you can push to whatever you want. It doesn't crash as often, still does, but not anywhere near as epically bad as Eclipse does. Looks good, gets out of the way. It's got a slim UI. And we solved it with an HDMI, man.
Oh, right on.
We beat you to it.
So when somebody else is crashing, so I need to take this Linux machine.
Oh. Well, you do what you gotta do, man. We're good.
I'm sorry, do you mean that?
No, you're good. Don't talk to me. The main difference between IntelliJ and Android Studio, though, is IntelliJ does not have built-in UI features for the Google Cloud services or any other Google services that you would use for Android development. And there's going to be a noticeable difference when you fire the two up. And it also does not shove Gradle down your throat, which I know people are hit and miss with. Some people like Gradle, some people don't, but this doesn't force you to use it. Android Studio, again, it's a modified version of IntelliJ. There's really nothing else to that. You're going to see a bunch of links to Google Cloud services. Trying to think of what else is there. I've seen them before. I really don't use it all that much. So the other thing that really annoys me about Android Studio is it kind of pimps Gradle to the max. It really does. It just throws it right in your face from the get-go. Brings me to my next point, the Gradle supremacy, as I like to call it.
First quick question, have you ever tried Intel XDKs?
I'm sorry, what was that?
It's called Intel XDK.
No.
You never, it's basically all pure HTML5 coding.
Okay.
But what they do is they tie it in with Amazon and they build for everything.
So basically it's like a phone gap. You ever use PhoneGap before?
No.
It sounds like it's the same thing where you write the source code in one way and then it makes deliverables for each platform. That way you're maintaining one code base and not doing Android specific, then doing iOS, then doing Windows Phone. Yeah.
Then they also have an app you can install on your phone.
Uh-huh.
That you can run it on your phone off the cloud so it actually will interact with your phone, but if it hoses it, it won't destroy your phone in the process.
Mm. So it seems like it's kind of a don't brick your phone safety type deal. Here's the thing with that. I'm not a big fan of multi-deliverable programming languages, mostly because I have no interest in writing for iOS or Windows Phone. So because I'm like that, I have absolutely no qualms with just sticking with the Android. Now, people that need deliverables for each platform, yeah, that might be a solution for them, but that's not something I dabble with all too much.
Yeah, because it does everything from Facebook all the way to Chrome.
Okay.
And everything between it.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, the way it's going now, you can write for Android and it'll run on Chrome.
Yeah.
You know, so you're going to get two platforms in one. So moving back to the Gradle supremacy. Gradle is a build management system. I don't know how new it is, unfortunately, but it seems to be the hip, you know, if you want to be the cool programmer guy that sits in Starbucks all day, like me, use Gradle. But I don't use Gradle. And the reason I don't use Gradle is because it's heavily convoluted And if you don't run the offline configuration first, you're going to have issues building. And such to the point that your IDE just will not work. It will flat out tell you, sorry, Gradle's not updated, go piss off, basically is what it's going to do. Every time Gradle updates, you have the same issue. You've got to rerun the offline mode. If you don't rerun the offline mode, it's not going to work. And that just slows down my workflow drastically. Now, the cool thing about Gradle, though, is that it does dependency management very well. You just have to figure out how to tell it to manage dependencies, because it wants the library name along with a cryptic version number afterwards. Once you figure that out, you're good to go. But that's, if you're getting started doing Android development, try to avoid Gradle. Don't force yourself to beat your head against the wall about it, because it's not worth your time. You're better off trying to learn the programming, learn what you need to do to cater to the platform. Clearly, you have to get the software development kit, otherwise you're not going to be able to run Android. You know, that's kind of step one. But you have to know what you're getting yourself into first. That basically means, what does Google offer to give you for the SDK? They still do have the ADT. So like I said, if you hate yourself and use Eclipse, you still have that option. Android Studio's there. It's built in, ready to go. But you can also download the bare bones SDK, which is a really cool way to go if you want maximum flexibility to customize your workflows. All of that is available on that website, which, you know, just go to Android and look for developer. I don't know why I put that up there. I got bored and I figured, well, if you're already running Linux and don't want to bother with trying to figure out where all this stuff goes, I got a script for you that automatically downloads the SDK, installs it, gives it the proper permissions, and configures your environment for you. And that's available on my GitHub. The only catch with this is, A, you got to be running Linux, obviously. B, it only downloads a specific version of the SDK, because I'm not smart enough to figure out how to crawl over there and which version is the recent one. You do need sudo. I know some people that don't have that, but you do need it. You also need wget or curl, and it is PG-13, so your wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, won't get mad at you for using it. If you do the SDK only option, you do need to set it in your path variable. Otherwise, you're never going to see any of those tools in there. There's actually, once you fully install and download and configure the SDK, there's two different paths, I'm sorry, that you need included in there. There's a platform tools and a tools directory. Both of those need added to your path. If you don't have those added and you're wondering why you can't see the SDK tools, why you can't update, that's probably why. And I struggled with that for about a year. So basically, I wanted to give a brief overview of some of the tools that you have available to you for Android. One of them is actually the SDK Manager. I know that's a really small picture in there, so if you can't see it, punch me afterwards. I'll let you. Just let me know. I'll give you one. This is going to be your bread and butter for getting the most recent versions of the SDK, any of the support libraries that come with it, the cloud service libraries. All that's going to be done here. The nasty thing about this, though, is that you cannot run this explicitly from the terminal. And if somebody figured it out, correct me, but I've never seen it be able to just type in Android update SDK and then just do everything from command prompt. That makes automation bad, because you always need a GUI install. You need some type of X installed on your system, or Wayland if you want to do that. So, but this is going to be the key point here. You can also manage what are called AVDs from this window too, Android Virtual Devices. Android Virtual Devices are the emulated software. It's basically the entire version of Android emulated. There's different profiles that you can have for like Nexus 4, Nexus 5, and all that kind of stuff. And it's to the hardware. ADB, Android Debugging Bridge. This is another big one. This is basically how you're going to communicate with a device once you connect it to the USB port and ADB is able to see it. Once ADB has visibility of the device, it's all with this tool here, you can actually get your own shell into the device and do whatever you want. You can also push files to the device, remove files from the device, check SQLite databases. You pretty much have full control over the device unless it's not rooted. If you really, really want to hack at the device, you need to root it first, then use ADB to get into it, and you have full control over the device. You also use ADB if you want to install, this is technically not true anymore, but some custom ROMs like Cyanogen or any of the 50,000 other custom ROMs that are out there that are ranked negative 20 on the list. Those ones you can install with ADB because it'll give you a way to get to BIOS options on the device. And it's in terminal, which again, AVD. The emulator performance, the problem with AVD that I have is that, like I said earlier, it does not give you a true testing environment because there are some things you absolutely cannot test with AVD. One of those is being games. If you're writing games and you're using an OpenGL renderer, you cannot use AVD for that. It's going to be extraordinarily slow. Even if you're using an abstraction library like libgdx, it's going to bog down. If you need to do animation testing, do not use the emulator. The key point there is you always want to have devices available to you, hardware devices, a tablet, a phone, anything, you know, Google, one of the wear devices, a stupid watch, whatever. You want to have those available to you. I've got, crap, how many? Three tablets, four phones, a Chromebook. And it's ridiculous. On my desk, they're all just panned out, and there's just this powered USB port, and they're all just plugged into them. It's kind of sad when you look at it, really. Well, I can't keep a girlfriend. So I spent all my money on devices. This is what the AVD manager looks like when you fire it up, the GUI. Basically, what you're going to see here, this is a list of every device that you have created for that, and you'll press the create button. There are device profiles that are already built in, like the Nexus 4, Nexus 5, you know, any flavor of Android. I'm sure there's some new ones with the new 5 release, which I haven't downloaded yet. I don't spend too much time in this window, obviously, because I have a bunch of hardware. Android projects. Clearly, the first thing you want to do when you're starting an Android app is to make an Android project. Android projects can be made on the terminal, or they can be made within your IDE, depending on which way you want to go. IDEs have a little convoluted process of picking the project, picking your source control management, which libraries you want to use, default UIs to install. I mean, they give you the whole kit and caboodle, they really do. However, if you're doing it from the terminal with the Android create project command, you get an extremely bare bones experience. There's almost nothing in there except for the required directories and the manifest file, which has nothing in it. Again, if you want absolute flexibility, go with that. If not, I wouldn't worry about it. The IDE can take care of it for you. Building projects. This is actually another point of contention entirely. If you're building from the terminal, you do have to use ANT a lot of times, or Gradle, whatever. So you have to know how to use those to build. Otherwise, you can just run whatever script you want. It can be a headache. And from the IDE, you just click the run button. It's usually a green arrow. That's all you have to click. The nice thing about IDE is they support build profiles. So you can have your development release, you can have your debug release, you can have testing, you know, if that's your thing, if you test your code. I don't. So, you know.
That's what the end user's for.
Yeah, exactly. I just give it to you guys, you know, and then you guys tell me what's screwed up. So basically, at that point, you know, when I was doing Android, I was self-taught. You know, my experience beforehand was doing robotics, and then I just jumped into Android. But if you're self-motivated, you're going to end up using these resources to learn how to do Android programming. Stack Overflow is a good place to go to if you want to deal with the 5-year-olds. The API reference. It's a good place to go, but you're going to find black holes in the documentation eventually. I mean, there's going to be something on there that's not documented, and you're going to bang your head off your desk for days. That is where Android XREF comes in. Android XREF is basically an online reference for the entire source project for Android. You can browse the source code, search for anything in the project. It's huge. It even has the kernel source, I believe, that's run on there. But if you have a question about an issue and you can't find anybody who knows anything about it, that's where you're going to go, because you're going to look for it and you're like, wow, I'm not dumb. They didn't know what they were doing. XDA. XDA is always a good place to go for just mobile development in general, especially if you want to hack your device. That's a good place to go to. It's very, very, very technically oriented, though. So if you're really, really into hacking, really into getting deep down into the devices and figuring out why the firmware does what it does or why these builds, you know, I can't connect to my enterprise Wi-Fi network in 4.4.4. Why is it doing that? That's where you're going to go because they're going to give you source examples for the build. Push yourself to do it. Otherwise, you're just going to go to bed and wonder why you didn't finish it. And have fun doing it. That's the key thing there. Most importantly, though, you do want to use Linux for it because I told you to. That's why you want to do it. So, other stuff. Like I said, the Android SDK DL script that I have available on my GitHub will automatically download a version for you. I was trying to get a Vagrant image ready to go, and I called it Vagabond because I try to be cute with puns. I can't get this to work yet. If anybody's good with Vagrant in here and wants to partner up with me and let me know what I'm doing wrong, please do, because this is turning out horribly, horribly so. And all that's available at github.com/GregFMartin. I've got a bunch of resources available to help everybody get started with Android programming up there, and also on my website too, so. And that was it. And there's my LibreOffice. It's beautiful. So I know somebody's dying to pin me on something I put on here. Somebody is. You.
Gradle.
No, it's not. It's a piece of shit. It is. It's an absolute piece of shit. I hate it. Does anybody here like Gradle? Anybody use it and like it? Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. That thing sucks. That's the worst build management ever. Anything else? Anybody, come on, do me something. You, in the back, what do you want?
I have like a loose dream in my head of creating a distributable virtual machine pre-configured, pre-set up for Android development.
Wow, I'm glad you said that because I have something in the works for you, sir.
There you go.
That being said, is anybody in here familiar with Vagrant at all? Anybody know what Vagrant is? Does anybody know what Docker is? Vagrant?
Docker.
Okay, yeah. I was looking at Docker for like 6 seconds and just said, well, let's do Vagrant. So, yeah. That was a decision made at 9 o'clock at night at Dunkin' Donuts. The best place to make decisions, by the way.
What about Starbucks? They said Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, I have a gold card, but I didn't have any money on it at the time. So I just said go to Dunkin' Donuts. It was closer.
Local bar.
Well, that too. I have wine at home, though.
Created by
beers. Created by beers, yeah. Or wine in my case, Merlot. Earlier, I had somebody ask me, you know, what kind of programming experience would you have going into? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go for it.
Do you have to do anything to the phones, your hardware, in order to test these? Are you linking them to?
I'm glad you said something about that. If you buy. Well, yeah, any consumer device that you buy is not going to have the developer options enabled by default. With newer versions of Android, if you actually go into the settings and go down to,
build,
yes, there you go. You got to tap it like 5,000 times. And then it says, hey, you're a developer now, dude. So you can go ahead and enable all those options. Once you do that and you connect your device, like I said, you may need to run ADB as root. But once you do, you will see your device pop up down there and you can start doing whatever you want.
So you don't have to root the device?
No, absolutely. You can root it if you want, but you don't have. That's not a prerequisite to development. No, not at all. In fact, it's better if you don't root your device in some cases because you're writing to how consumers use their phone, because not everybody's going to have a rooted device. Not everybody's going to have a custom ROM on their phone, and it's a different experience every time, you know? So it's, yeah.
One of the statistics I saw recently is that approximately 65% of people between the ages of 45 and 65 who buy these new smart devices rarely, if ever, download anything or add anything from the Play Store.
And that's true, yeah, and that's true.
So on one hand, you know, as a developer, you have to understand this community that you're going to be on. Part two of this is that as a developer, and you're using the IDEs, and rightfully so, you recommend that you should have a device, a target device that you're going to have there that you're going to cable in.
Right.
You've spoken about cable. But have you thought about using your IDE, either connecting your IDE with your device, your smart device, either Bluetooth or Wi-Fi?
That is actually...
I have not found any developer who's done that yet.
Correct.
I use the cable, but nobody's tried to.
ADB actually supports remote debugging. So you can have ADB listen to a specific TCP port and it, you know, register to the phone, whichever, and you can send remote debugging through there or remote commands to the phone. I say debugging, but that's just because it's Android debugging bridge, not.
Well, when you say debugging, I'm thinking about, I'm going to send my app here and now I'm going to test it. It doesn't work.
Correct.
You call that debugging.
Correct.
Okay.
Pretty much same thing.
So, but right now, everyone that I've talked to has always done it. No one tried the connection facilities either.
Right, and I actually haven't either.
Okay.
One of my colleagues has actually tried remote debugging with ADB using the TCP port. He has said it's been a little slower compared to just actually connecting the device to the PC, but I can't tell you one way or another whether or not that's the truth, because I haven't used it. It's just one of those random features that it's there, but who knows?
Yeah. It's a little slower, but it does the same thing.
You've used it before? Okay. How was your experience with it? I mean, was it just...
I mean, really, since you're only sending, like, a tiny amount of data,
right,
it's not really that different. And, I mean, all the features are still there. Unless you have a really bad Wi-Fi network.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, too. More to your point, if you are doing remote debugging, you have to consider how far away you're going to keep the device from wherever it's at, you know, because you're going to have to put both devices on the network. They're going to have to be able to see each other and communicate. And if you're moving it away, further away from your wireless access point, that's just going to increase the debugging time. So
typically, most people, or most developers, at least, who have the smart devices already have it on the network.
Right.
So if you got your PC there, you got it there, too. So the only question is setting your OS.
Uh-huh.
And your development, your IDE, so that it sees that as a pathway to for your tests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just one more connection option that you have, really.
Where it's really useful is if you're writing an app that needs to use that USB line. So that's where I think it should.
Yeah, USB utilities like. Was it some USB controllers? If you're developing a game and you need a USB port open on the device, that's one way to do it, which I've actually had to do that before. Thanks for saying that. Yeah, basically, if you need that USB port open, remote debugging is the way to go. But, you know, that's all there is to it. Anybody have any interest in doing Android programming? That's fair. Now, of those of you that showed interest, how many of you actually started programming? Good. And thoughts on Android so far? Android programming in general? Anybody?
No, I don't directly use Java. I use processing language that's still bootstrapped in Java, but...
Processing.
So this was more for like artists and designers, but I'm still technically like engineer background, but I like it because you can do a lot more with a lot less code and like,
right,
the overhead.
And are you doing that on Linux? Get out. We don't want you here. You're in the wrong room, dude. No, I have used processing before.
Yeah.
It's a little arcane.
Yeah.
It's very strange to me.
Integration with like the build systems and like source control, you still have to do that separately. It's not built into the processing IDE, but
right.
If I show it to a kid, I'm like, hey, you can have a GUI built within like 5 lines instead of like, oh yeah, you need to learn how just to do something like print hello world in Java that would be much more complicated.
IntelliJ, you just draw the UI, man.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I'm going to check out the what you provided.
Yeah, I really would recommend it. And like I said, for Android development, I really do suggest IntelliJ. Mm-hmm. If you want to use Android Studio as well, that's fine. Android Studio, the nice thing about that as well is the graphic design component of it is a little bit better. because it does give you the ability, if you actually span it full screen, it gives you the ability to see your UI on several different device types on the same window. So it'll show you like Nexus 4, Nexus 5, Nexus 10, Nexus 20,000. You know, it'll show all of those aligned in on one
fragmented screen resolution.
Exactly. And you know what? That's actually a really hard part of Android programming is figuring out how to cater to all the different screen sizes. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to spend 90% of your time doing that.
Yep.
90% of your time. Yeah. Well, the orientation is another thing, too. Orientation is interesting because when you flip your device, it actually kills the app and restarts it. So that's one thing to deal with is that, but that's the other thing with dealing with the UI changes for orientation too, because you know you don't want your compressed layout for portrait is not going to work in landscape, or it will, but it'll be too big.
On start on create.
In Linux, do you have any emulators that work with touchscreen?
You mean like if you're trying to fire up a like an Android?
Maybe somebody might have checked some things out rather than.
All of the IDEs.
Well, when you're testing your Android devices inside of an emulator and you don't have a device that's like, if you actually don't physically have a touchscreen, my laptop's a touchscreen, so I can use that. If you don't have
What operating system do you use for touchscreen?
I'm sorry?
You use the Fedora touchscreen?
No. No. I test personally. I test on hardware only. I don't use. I personally do not use the emulator. I use it to fire it up to remind myself that it's there occasionally, but for actually testing any app or anything like that, I always have a physical device, and I seriously recommend you do that because, like I said, the experience on the emulator is not pristine.
Yeah, I know that. I was just asking.
Right. Yeah.
Can I ask you what tablets you use? I mean, if you're gonna buy three or four. Sevens, my God.
No, I don't have three or four Nexus 7s. No, I have a Nexus 7. I have a newer Nexus 7. I have a Samsung Galaxy Tab 2, and I have a Nexus 10.
Lord.
Yeah.
All right. Dad,
where's your
money
off here? So do I. It's a miracle I'm still eating at this point. Yeah.
That's like ramen's cheap.
Oh, yeah, that too. beef flavored ramen. That's been my diet for months. Why I'm skinny and in bad shape as well. having the multiple devices does help. It really does. Especially like I was telling him over here, being able to see your UI on those different screen sizes is a boon. It really is. You need to do that. That way you know what the user is going to be experiencing. Testing on emulators, firing up multiple emulators at the same time, that is it. No. You will blow your computer up. I mean, it will seriously just explode.
So if you're a brand new Java programmer, is it worth cutting your teeth on Android instead of standard Java, just doing standard Java? Is it worth just diving into Android to learn Java?
Your Java skills will translate to Android programming. Okay, that's the good thing. You absolutely should learn Java before you jump over to Android. The thing that you're going to find weird is that if you keep yourself in core Java for so long and get used to some of the eccentricities of the language levels, like doing diamonds, for example, in language level 7, or if you get used to doing lambdas in 8, all right, those don't necessarily translate over to Dalvik or Art. For example, you cannot do lambdas in Android. It will just puke. All right? So... yes, you should learn Java. Yes, you need your core Java skills, but don't expect everything to carry over. All right, that is an absolute.
Following up on that, would you recommend Java as a good first language for people to learn? I've had arguments with people about, well, it does too much for you when you miss out on some stuff. Where do you fall on that?
My first language was C. And I hate myself every day for that. All right? Because when I went to go do object-oriented programming afterwards, it was a massive pain to wrap myself around how it wanted to go. And then you have all these other things like aspect-oriented programming or backflip-oriented programming now, you know. But because Java is so universally accepted as the de facto object-oriented language, it's used everywhere in the enterprise, Android's using it, you know, it's very, very prolific. So I would seriously recommend using Java for your first language. Yeah. Did you have a... I thought you said you're growing your hand a bit. Are you, like, waving at me? Yeah, you. Yeah, you. No. Hi.
Hello.
How's it going? Didn't see you there. What's going on, man?
What phones do you use?
Phones. I have a unlocked Moto G. I have a very old HTC V. But that thing's a piece of crap. My first phone was a T-Mobile MyTouch 3G, which for some reason is still working. Because I've kicked it, had it run over by a car, threw it in milk, that sort of thing. I could microwave it. I just haven't gotten that far yet. Yeah, throw it in the microwave. Bend it and put it in the microwave. A hot dog bun. Those are the only three phones I use, and I really don't test a whole lot on phones. I spend most of my time on tablets. A lot of the stuff I design is for the 7-inch form factor. Because like I said, a lot of the stuff I do is in enterprise or has enterprise interests, and it's better for people who have that larger screen to see what they're doing. And they just can't do it on the phone. You know, it's something, a lot of people in the enterprise are old, gray hair, like, don't kill me. I just looked at who was sitting here. I'm like, oh God. I am so dead after this. No, a lot of people in the enterprise are just older people. They have trouble reading smaller screens. And when you have a UI on a smaller device that has inflated font sizes or anything like that, it's a bad experience. Yeah. And that's the thing. When you're developing Android, you always have to think about the user experience first. Even if you're a back-end coder, even if you're doing stuff like writing services or connecting to web services or like how an app behaves in the back-end, you still have to be concerned with the user experience. That's first and foremost with Android. What's going on, man?
Where do you get most of your ideas for apps?
Merlot. Very, very vast amounts of Merlot. No, a lot of this, like I said, a lot of it's for enterprise. So if I have a particular need that I'm doing, I will write an app for it. You know, it's the same story you hear. Somebody gets an itch for something that they need a piece of technology to do. You write the program, you do it. Dude, am I going to die? Anyway, I get my ideas from that too, you know? No, I also get my ideas just from general thinking. Like I just sit down and I'm just trying to figure out something to do. You know, I get bored, start working on something, I figure, oh, this looks good, and then I just keep running with it, and then it evolves into something that is completely asinine and not even what I wanted in the first place. That's the way to go, man. Especially when you're designing UIs. UIs are a really interesting beast. I do all of my own graphic design. I do all of everything, man, everything. Yeah. It's a very, and when you're a solo programmer for Android doing that stuff, it's a very slow process, very, very slow. Especially when you're meticulous, and you have to be, because if you're going to start going into self-publishing, you got to play the game. You got to compete with these other people that are doing that kind of stuff, and you got to be just as good, if not damn better, than they are. And they're always going to outdo you because it's somebody who has a startup and they got 25 people who have PhDs in machine learning. You know, it's tough. It's tough. I ain't gonna lie. It's tough, but you can do it.
Is it possible to make a career out of it just by being solo on it?
Is it possible to do what?
To make a career out of Android development.
Oh, absolutely.
You're working by yourself.
Absolutely. I have...
Competing with other companies or...
Right. I personally have had very little success doing that. I know people who have, though. Okay. It's very possible to do it. But you're more akin to do it if you have a small startup with 5, 6, 10 people, that sort of thing. You will be more profitable like that, but then you also have to play the business game. You know, that's just how it goes.
I'd recommend do the app development, but then start digging down into the lower levels too. There's a high demand for people that know the whole stack.
Oh, absolutely.
Popular embedded in the embedded world.
That's another good point. Yeah, that's another good point too. There are actually a lot of companies. Mobile Defense in Cleveland. They're an Android company. They do a whole bunch of stuff, but they really look for serious low-end Android programmers, people who get into hacking the kernel, people who want to modify it on the device and do that kind of stuff. So if you know you like doing kernel hacking on Linux and you want to take those skills and transfer them over to Android, that's perfect. You have a massive career ahead of you. I didn't need that anyways. Wasn't mine.
Can you do the UI one in Cleveland?
For the graphics, like the actual making the actual icons, I actually use Inkscape and GIMP for actually designing icons. I do, you know, there are some icons I write, there are some that I modify from an existing like specimen file, but I do that stuff. For actually designing the IDE, like the layout inside the IDE, I will type it out manually in the XML format. A lot of times I do not manually draw it out because I don't get things right the way I want. You know, the IDE is good for the you know, GUI designer, but a lot of times when you need fine grain control, that's not gonna be the best solution. You will need to modify the XML file at some point. And that's the nice thing about Android programming too, is that all your UIs are specified in XML. So it's not, you know, if you know XML, you're good to go, man. That's all there is to it.
What you bring up by pointing out the XML feature,
right,
is the fact that it's a combination of Java, XML, you didn't even mention HTML5, okay, which is also a standard like Java for being able to run across multiple different platforms.
Correct, and if you're not interested in running across multiple different platforms, if you're doing just straight Android, you do not need to worry about HTML5.
Well, one of the key points is the question that you raised over there is if you are a developer,
mm-hmm,
and you focus on, say, the smart device platform, which may, today it's Android, tomorrow it may not.
Correct.
It could be Chromebook, it could be something else. But the issue is you need those skills,
right,
for those cross-platforms, mm-hmm, in order to be able to take where you are today and tomorrow.
Absolutely. Yeah, and if cross-platform is your deal, then that's the way to go.
Yeah.
You know, it really is.
The other question is about the MIT development platform.
Vaguely familiar. I saw that, played with it a little bit, and then just dropped it.
It's completely different mindset.
Oh, I imagine it is. Their goal is to make everything as simple as possible, and they did. But I don't like that, so I don't use it.
Well, as a programmer.
Well, yeah. No. I hope that answered your question, because I really don't want you throwing that thing going off again and then.
Absolutely. You were a target. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
The guy in the world.
Man. I couldn't take it. I'm only 27, man. I don't want to die. So that's about it, guys. I mean, I'll be around. So if any of you guys want to heckle me or anything like that afterwards, come find me.